Seasonal greetings to you, Kieran.
Seasonal greetings to you, Graham.
What a great Christmas it's been.
That sounded very organized.
Yeah, what a great Christmas. What a fitting end to a fantastic year.
A fantastic year. A year that has been full of ups and downs for everyone. You know, I've made some great friends. You know, I just want to thank those who have really been there for me in the downs and for the ups or whatever stereotypical end of year social media post.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Onwards and upwards, 2021.
Yeah.
Hashtag, I've achieved hashtag some blessed.
Of my, some of my goals I've hit this year, but the others I'm going to be setting for next year. New year, new me.
I think what this year has told me more than anything is that I just need to learn to love myself.
Yeah, I give too much to others, you know, and I just need to focus on me for the next year.
I think what you need to do, Kieran, is remove the negative people from your life, and it's only then that you'll truly soar. You're flying now, but you'll truly soar.
Well, to be fair, this is, unfortunately, to break the news to you on this recording, but removing the negative people from my life, I need to cease contact with you.
I knew this day would happen.
We all knew it was coming.
Too old for this quit.
You look shorter than normal.
Well, yeah, funny story. My son's sleeping in the hallway, in a pram in the hallway, not just like sleeping in the hallway.
My son is asleep in the garage. We crushed up some Valium and he's out for the count.
You don't get a bed till you're six. MDF is a comfortable duvet. Stop crying. No, he's in his pram asleep in the hallway and our stairs are creaky AF and my chair and my desk is upstairs. So I'm literally just sat on a cold tile floor in the conservatory. And Kieran can just see the top half of my head, which
this is parenthood.
Means it's 50% better than his usual view. Did you have a nice Christmas?
I had a lovely Christmas, yeah. I've really been enjoying, for the first time in the entire relationship with my wife, having more than 2 days off together at Christmas.
Yeah.
She always works over Christmas, so we usually only get Christmas Day and Boxing Day, or Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And that's just a bit shit, really, because you have Christmas Day, and then she's like, well, I've got to go to work tomorrow, and means I can stay at home and play with all my new toys. Or, you know, she has to work Christmas Eve, and I have to sit there staring at my toys under the tree, waiting for them to unwrap them. So, personally, it's been a very enjoyable year.
I've got to go to work. Does she choose to go to work, or does she have to go to work?
She has to, yeah. Just because, you know, I quit my job this year, so I'm unemployed now. So she has to go to work to afford to pay me expensive, you know, bills and expensive equipment for this podcast.
Yeah.
I didn't really quit my job. I do have a job. No, she just works in and... Well, she manages a spa, so obviously whilst everyone else is off chilling over Christmas, having nice spa days, she's usually there working, making sure they have a nice time. So big up my wife and, you know, big up the furlough scheme, which has allowed me to have a bit of time off with her this year.
Yeah, that has been one good thing, hasn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, despite all the shit, you know, personally, it's been an all right Christmas. But how about you? Is that a little Tigger onesie that you got for Christmas in the background? I can see your...
No, it's not. It's not the elf costume that you have. That's the one of the, so I think probably the most likes we've ever had for an Instagram post.
Yeah,
of you dressed up as an elf. You still haven't answered me about what you do with that costume outside of seasonal Instagram post, but I'll just leave it to my imagination.
Yeah, it was Buddy the Elf. I decided, obviously, we've been off this Christmas, as I've mentioned many times. But, my wife's... Well, she's had a bit of a... Well, we both had a bit of a rough year for various personal reasons. And part of that rough year is extending over Christmas. So I decided on Christmas Eve, one way to make a laugh would be to dress as Buddy the Elf, a.k.a. a twat. But so just on Christmas Eve, I just thought when she got up and went for a shower, I like ran downstairs and fed the dog and like trying to get this Buddy Elf costume on in the kitchen, and then just came up and it made her laugh for a little bit. So it was worth it.
Yeah, it is those little things sometimes. A couple of months ago, I was giving Logan a bath and Kristen was in his bedroom getting his room ready for bedtime. And he was, I think we'd had a bit of a, not the best weekend, let's say. And Logan was like, "Daddy, get in the bath, get in the bath." And I was like, "Man, I can't fit in the bath, especially not with you. Like, the bath's small at the best of times, but I'm not going to fit in with you." And then I was like, "You could keep making excuses, or you could just do it." So I got in the bath, and Kristen comes in. There were just like two of us just like sandwiched into the bath. it looked like, I don't know if you've ever seen, for those who were in the eating of the flesh, when a sausage bursts from its casing, that's what it looked like when I was sat in the bath. It was awful. But we all had a laugh about it. And sometimes you need to do something silly to break up that seriousness. So
yeah,
good on you for dressing as Buddy.
Yeah, the only thing was, it was like, what's annoying is like, I got an extra large because I thought costumes were always a bit small, aren't they? And it was still a little bit too small. So it velcroed up at the back. But if like, I think cause I'm quite a broad guy, if I like relax my shoulders, it just popped open. So I sort of had to do it up and then walk around like this for, you know, 10 minutes while she's in the shower. Like, come on, hurry up. Anyway, on topic, what did you do for Christmas? What did you get? How much did you eat? How disappointed in yourself are you about how much you ate? Or ashamed, I should say.
Enough that I'm going to be eating two lots of protein shakes a day instead of meals after January. I really am. I ordered some Huel the other day. Just need to stop eating. But I had, well, we had a weird one because obviously, you know, we're allowed to see three households on Christmas Day. But, you know, no one was meant to stay overnight. And my parents came up for the day. And then went home. So instead of doing like a proper roast dinner, because it takes hours, we just had pizzas around my sister's house, which actually quite liberating, to be honest. Just no fuss, just whack them in the oven, sit there. And then in terms of what I got, though, man, I put it on Instagram, but I got everything that when I was younger, I remember when I was younger, I used to look at my dad on Christmas Day and I'd get like some wicked like Micro Machines toy or a Transformer, like... Optimus Prime, and I'd be like, yeah, this is the shit. And I'd look at what my dad's getting, and my dad's getting like socks and like pajamas. And I'm like, God, some whack ass gifts on that side of the room.
Your Christmas Day sucks, Dad.
Yeah, what a load of bullshit. I got all that stuff this year, and now I feel like my dad, and I love it because I got a nose strimmer, I got some socks, I got some boxer shorts, I got some nice like shower gel stuff from Lush, and some face scrub. And this is it now. This is the kind of shit that I love, that I'm really happy with. So it was a great day. What did That's you amazing. Get?
Very kind of similar idea, really. I got socks, which I was buzzing about because Dwight has chewed on my socks. So every time I put a pair of socks on, there's like a hole in it somewhere. And then, or like I won't notice it. And then I'm out walking in. And then my little toe will just poke out the sock and it's like really uncomfortable.
Oh, no.
First world problems, you know, big time. Got some nice vegan sweets, which is always good. And then Claire got me like a fire pit / barbecue, which just looks immense. Well, it came in this big box when I first opened it. I thought it was a wok at first because it looks kind of like a big wok. And then you put it all together and then she was like, oh, you can get a grill thing to put on the top and it can be a barbecue, or you can just burn shit in it and we can just stand outside and be warm. So I think because this year we've got a Christmas tree that's real for the first time, I think we're going to just burn that motherfucker when Christmas is over because... Well, it's dead now anyway, so if you nudge it, all you can hear is the sound of all the needles falling on the floor. So that bastard tree, I'm going to get my revenge. I'm going to cut it up and I'm going to burn it in the spirit of Christmas. Metal as fuck.
That seems like quite a nice kind of ritualistic, like, end to a shitty year, though, doesn't it? Like, burn every piece of evidence of that year.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, it's been apart from, you know, well, to be fair, like we normally spend Christmas driving to Claire's mum and dad's and then to my mum, my mum is dead, but my mum and step. No, fucking hell.
Wow. God.
I can't remember which one of my parents is alive and which one is dead.
Jesus
my dad
Christ.
And my dad and the stepmoms. I think that's right.
Oh my God. Jesus.
My dad and my stepmoms. And so it's quite a bit of a drive. So like, in a way, we quite enjoyed just being able to relax this year and just sit and eat food and watch TV. Like, I was just in pain. You know, that much food that it just hurts.
Yeah.
But you just sat there staring, thinking, I'm going to have one more on Yumbaji or a bit more of that stuffing or something. It's fucking great, isn't it?
It's the best, man. And I got some big-ass pajamas on Christmas Eve as well.
Nice.
Just like you know, ones where you normally, if you're wearing like a half decent pair of jeans, like you're very aware of how much you've eaten. But when you wear like those loose pajamas, it just doesn't matter anymore.
That's the thing. You've got a plan ahead, really, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I put the. Where are they? I put them on Instagram, but I bought these ones especially, which are like, they're like made out of like fleecy material.
Oh, they look so comfortable.
Honestly, it's like wearing like a blanket around you. It's so good, but then they just get really hot. But yeah, good times. Yeah. Merry times had by all.
And do you know what? We were saying earlier, like, this has actually been, in many ways, a good year. Well, I mean, no, it hasn't. It's been a fucking dumpster fire of a year. But us launching Too Old for This Pit and kind of having an escape from what was going on, and I don't know, hopefully maybe providing other people with a little bit of an escape from what was going on, that's been a real, oh, I don't want to say blessing, I hate people who say blessing and blessed, but it has been
a year of ups and downs,
yeah,
a lot of challenges, no, except, sorry, carry on.
No, I thought you were going back to aspirational Instagram posts. But it has been good, hasn't it? Like, we've done in the last, we only launched this in April, and I never thought that we'd have spoken to half the people we have this year.
Yeah, we don't want to get all deep and meaningful, but let's not do that. It's been shit. I hate Too Old for This Pit. But yeah, I mean, I was scrolling through like our Spotify list, and like, I don't know how many episodes are we in now? This will be 14, won't it? And like, we've already spoken to some people that are like in some of our favorite bands or associated with some of our favorite bands, and it's just been it's just been wicked. And maybe in a way it was quite nice timing, because, you know, some of these bands who aren't touring or whatever and have got a lot more free time, you know, are willing to speak to, you know, a couple of schmucks like us about music. But thank you everyone who's come on. We love you deeply.
We do. You said you weren't going to get deep, but you've ruined it now.
I know.
And this week's kind of different again. We're kind of almost coming full circle. Our very first two episodes, we didn't have any guests. And our first episode was about nu metal and us growing up with our baggy jeans and our chains and wallets and our
bad FUBU
attitudes. T-shirt. Yeah, and just our frosted tips and our negative attitudes.
Our hatred of authority and love of greasy hair.
And love of people who dress up like giant ladybirds and play bass. It wasn't bass, it was guitar. But anyway, yeah, so this week we kind of, instead of having a musician on, we actually thought, let's have one of our Insta pals on, a person who goes under the moniker of Mosher Mags, whose name is actually Rachel.
So, is her surname Mosher Mags?
Yeah, Rachel Mosher Mags, yeah.
Which is so weird, but maybe do you think she started Instagram because she was called Mosher Mags? Because her surname's Mosher Mags? Or is it just a coincidence? Like the dentist is called Crentist, do you know what I mean? Like, I wonder whether that was the inspiration, whether she just, you know, genuinely...
I don't know, man, but I knew there was a kid in primary school whose name was Smiley Crab, and it's still the best name I've ever heard in my life. I'm not even joking. Like, it brings a smile to my face now just saying it. Smiley Crab.
Hang on. We need to talk about this.
I don't know what more is there to say.
His first name was Smiley Crab, or his first name was Smiley and his surname was Crab.
When I say Smiley, you say Crab. Smiley. No, his first name was Smiley and his surname was Crab. I mean, C-R-A-double-B, not, you know, but still.
Oh, my God. What has this year been?
I genuinely barely spoke to this kid in primary school. I think we were in, like, different classes. And I only knew about his name, like, once or twice. But here I am, like, 26 years later, 28 years later, talking about him bringing a smile to my face. That is power right there.
I'm going to see if he's on Facebook now. Smiley.
Don't be looking him up. That's weird.
No, Shirley Crab. A lot of Shirley Crabs.
Shirley Crab. Anyway, we're going off on a mad tangent already.
I need to say one more thing. I need to reminisce about when I used to work in a call centre, and I don't know if it was me that got it or someone else on my team got it, but someone came through, and her name was Mrs. Cunt.
No, not with a C.
Yeah. And,
oh, my God.
We had Mr. Gash as well at one point.
Every episode when I upload this podcast, there's an option on Buzzsprout that you have to like tick to say whether or not there's explicit material. And every time I think, oh no, maybe we didn't swear this time. And then it's like, nope, tick that box.
And there was also the guy that came through once and I was just like, can I just confirm your name, please? And he went, yeah, it's Will Smith and don't take the piss. Anyway, back on topic. Rachel, surname Moshamags, joined us recently to talk about the well, to be fair, we were just like, let's talk about the glory days, but she actually made some really sort of valid points about the, you know, the cultural context of these magazines and the like, the fact that
I don't think we've said what she does.
Oh god, yeah, this is going well.
You would honestly think we were drunk. Yeah. We're not, we're just high on life.
Yeah, high on life and Valium that you're sharing with Logan to make him sleep.
So what does Moshamags do, Kieran?
Oh, it's funny you should ask that, Graham. And you know, that's a great question, and I am glad you asked it. Moshamags is basically it's an Instagram account, which is a really fucking cool account about basically the like old Kerrangs from, you know, like the early 2000s, late 90s, old Kerrangs, Metal Hammers, really back in, you know, the glory days of when it was cool to wear jeans that were five times too big, that were all shredded at the back, and to have as many chains around your neck as possible, and your wallet was on a chain, and you stank of BO, and you're a dirty little sweaty dreadlocked mosher. Yeah. When, you know, when things were really good in the world. So her account is basically dedicated to these old magazines. And obviously, yeah, like we were looking at it, kind of, you know, we go through them and look at them, and they are quite funny to look back on. But yeah, she was had quite an interesting view on it, because she was saying there is no way of looking up like an archive of them or anything. There's no physical record of them other than, you know, probably in people's attics, so it's quite a cool thing for to preserve and to look into, because them were the days.
They were, yeah. And we kind of, well, we just wanted to chat about why she started doing this, and also the valuable public service she provides by posting pictures of Jonathan Davis on a chat room in the early 2000s. And it was a good laugh. We had a good time just reminiscing on the glory days of new metal and just everything that we used to do that we are thoroughly ashamed now to think about doing, like, yeah, liking POD.
Hey, nothing wrong with POD.
Every day's a new day, Kieran.
Exactly. I thank God for every breath I take.
I know. I don't take it for granted either. Can't remember the next line.
I feel so alive. Well, anyway, yeah, you should check out Moshamags on Instagram, because it's a good account. So give that a follow. At Moshamags.
Yep. And thank you, Rachel Moshamags, for coming on. And yeah, hope everyone enjoys this as much as we did. See you in the new year. Have all the best for the new year as well to you and yours.
Don't you mean we'll see you in the episode outro?
Oh yeah, well, ruined it now, haven't I? I tell you what, we just fuck it. Just play the music here. Let's be done with it.
DJ, spin that shit.
Here we go.
Woo!
Welcome to Two Off This Pit, episode 14. Now, if you're like us and long to relive the glory days of the early noughties, early 2000s, and feel nothing but warm nostalgia at the thought of baggy jeans and studded belts, then you're going to love today's guest.
So today we're not joined by a musician or a band, but we're joined by our new friend, Rachel, who we've been speaking to for a while over social media. She runs the awesome Instagram account Moshamags, which takes a look at the quite frankly amazing alternative music magazines of yesteryear. So Rachel, you dirty mosher, how are you today?
I'm all right, yeah, I'm fine. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thanks for coming on. One of the like requirements is that you have to be a dirty mosher to come on here. So,
well, I sent you a mosher licenses, didn't I? So,
well, Rachel sent us two, and I just haven't got around to giving you one yet because COVID. But I will drive the 40 minutes to your house and drop it through your letterbox, so you can feel the same sense of pride that I did when I picked it up and realised I was officially a mosher. And if anyone pulled me over, the police, anyone, I could just be like, nah, do one, mate. I'm a mosher.
Is that in case, like, people are turning people away from gigs? Like, are you a mosher? If not, you're not coming in.
I wish they'd do that.
Rachel told me as well that it basically works the same as like an international, one of those like high clearance government passports. So you can just do what you want and just hand that over at the end. It's fine.
To be fair though, I think back in the day, it was kind of like that. Like you had to properly identify as a mosher, didn't you? Like you had to choose your side.
Yeah.
That was my idea behind them. Like just making a silly business card and just like what was the thing, because it was all about identity, wasn't it? It's almost like you literally wore it on your sleeve. Nowadays it's much harder to sort of identify people who are part of your subculture. There's a lot more mixing, but the subculture was really sort of like, oh, there's a goth over there, there's a mosher, there's a skater, and now it's like, oh, like everyone wears Converse and Vans and it's quite hard to distinguish. I used to know who was my friend by what shoes they were wearing.
I suppose that's why we need the cards nowadays.
Exactly. It's you know what I mean? Microchips next. So
public service. Next will be Bill Gates. But for now, the first step is having a Mosher Mags card.
Maybe that's what Bill's doing. He's just trying to track moshers with his 5G vaccine.
That's it. The joke is, you know, you don't need the vaccine if you've been to any rock club, I don't think. Any rock club in the UK between the years of 1995 and 2008. You're absolutely fine. You've probably drank a mix of like Skittles, diesel out of like a fire bucket. Jesus that's been Christ. Rinsed out and then passed around. So
those were the days.
Well, we obviously we did a little intro and kind of touched on what Mosher Mags is. For anyone that might not be following you, do you want to just kind of sum up what it's all about? Obviously, we said it's about, you know, old school Mosher Mags, funny enough.
But yeah, so the main premise is I have a collection of magazines that I used to get when I was a tween and a teen. There's no better way of saying it. I started getting it when I was 11 in 2001. And obviously that part of culture was so important. It was so, I don't know, there's something so like significant about it, the significance of your own adolescence. And it's sort of forgotten. And it's the kind of thing that you look back upon and either are embarrassed by or you look back on it fondly. And I'm at the stage where I can look back on it fondly now. So last year I went home and I found all my old magazines. I brought them up to my house and I started going through them. And I was like, someone needs to document these because this stuff is not online. And like this stuff is so like the cult, like the fashion, the culture is all coming back in. Like there's a new metal revival. Like if you're on Instagram or you're interested in collecting clothes, you know that the band t-shirt industry is absolutely booming. People spending £200-300 on Fear Factory shirts from 1994 and things like that, the kind of shirts that we used to buy off the market for like £10 bootleg shirts and things like that. And yeah, just realizing that there was a market for it. And it's combined as well, like the nerdy side of me. I work in a library. And I also have a library degree. And one of the big things working in the library was activating and looking at different like databases, like for research, for university research. And there's a lot of magazine archives. There's a big trend of like culture. Culture is like a big studyable area nowadays. And like, you know, one of the big ones I remember looking at work was the Spin magazine archive, where someone's literally scanned every single issue of Spin and archived all of the adverts and all of the letters and everything. And I remember like flicking through that and thinking, God, this is an absolute trove of like culture. I feel like magazines are like the real representation of the culture, like more than anything else. And I remember thinking like, there's no archive of Kerrang. Do you know what I mean? And like, it's such an important part of like youth culture, our own culture and British culture, weirdly. Like it's such a British thing. So I was like, that would be quite an interesting thing to do. Obviously, I don't have the wherewithal. I don't have the copyright information to like, you know, actually scan everything. That would be brilliant if I could at some point. But, you know, like being able to be the person that is almost the unofficial Kerrang archivist, I think, is what I would like to be. People message me asking me for, oh, I remember this letter. I was in this magazine. Someone messaged me. They were doing some research about the Wild Hearts in the 90s. I was like, oh, have you got any issues from this era? And I was like, yeah, I've got some. So I sent them some photos, things like that. Nice. Like, so it's not just the sort of funny stuff.
You're a public service.
Thank you. Yes, I am.
You're a public service. And like, shout out to librarians, because my mum was a librarian. And like, it's an awesome job and it's a really important job. And I think as well, I can imagine now in like 30, 40, 50 years time, either you going on Antiques Roadshow and trying to sell like a vintage Papa Roach edition and the valuers being like, yes, 75,000. Or you've been on some kind of like, I don't know, some kind of news night kind of thing, and you get called in and you're like sat in like a nice old dusty wood paneled library and you're really old talking about Mudvayne. I don't know. I think it's important. I think it is.
It's weird as well because the era that I think you're both a little bit older than me, only not by much. But
oh, here we go. It always goes this way.
I'm just saying, but I didn't have the internet. And like it was the era I'm sort of focusing on. I'm trying to get every issue of Kerrang and Rock Sound, that's my secondary one. Kerrang from 1995 to 2005. I think that 10-year period is like a very significant period in the mosher culture. That's like the new metal era. You've got like the introduction of the emo and screamo stuff. Like there's all the like sort of pop punk stuff from that era as well. So they're like the glory years, if you will. But when I started getting it, I didn't have the internet. So there's bands I've still never heard, but I know everything about them because I read about them in the magazine and, you know, like, or listen to the free CDs and things like that. And yeah, it's a nice sort of way to reminisce about this was my like relationship with this subculture that I was a bit too young to be a part of properly. So it's nice to like, you know, be that person for people where they can be like, oh, I remember that. I remember this. And the reaction to it's been amazing. I've had so many lovely messages off people, you know, just saying, you've just brought everything back. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of people who aren't like me, I am a bit of a hoarder. And I think it's probably the librarian archivist mindset where I feel there's value in everything. Do you know what I mean? There's like cultural value and stuff. And that often gets lost, you know? And like, I think a lot of people probably threw magazines out because they're so temporary as well, because they're just, you know, paper. It's ephemera, it's not important. So yeah, it's been nice. And yeah, reactions, like people like meeting people like yourselves, like who are doing quite a similar sort of thing, I suppose, is sort of looking back on things as well as sort of living it now as well. Like, because I'm embracing it a lot more than I used to as well. So,
yeah, we kind of like we talk about the new metal era a lot, I feel. But it was an exciting time. I mean, again, obviously, we might be a bit older than you, but you know, I'm assuming we were both similar kind of eras where that was when we were sort of feeling out music and deciding what sort of music we were going to be into. And Kerrang and these old magazines, you know, definitely played a massive part of that. And it's funny, actually, you know, you're saying about people, you know, memories coming back. And as soon as you mentioned the internet, the first thing I thought about was back then it was all about dial up. And then you'd be going on MSN and talking to your friends. And then MSN did that thing where you could have whatever song you were listening to on your chat or whatever. Yeah, it was just a really cool time. But I mean, what in terms of like that scene, so like the early noughties is what we're kind of talking about. Do you think there is it just nostalgia, or do you think there was something particularly special about the scene at that time? Or is it just people like us longing to be young again?
I think it's a combination of the lot of it, really. I think because it was such a changeable time. Like there's such a, like obviously you can't talk about it without talking about 9/11. Everything changed after that in terms of music and culture and what people's priorities were. But then it became sort of, I think music became a lot more, like they hadn't had anything really to be political about for a long time. So it became quite political after that. It became sort of, you know, obviously that was when System of a Down really sort of came out of their shell and started doing that sort of thing. So I think that there's that element of it. And then I think going back to what I said earlier about, you know, the internet and you talking about the internet, a lot of this stuff, it was tied up with being like the early days of home internet access. And like obviously these older issues of Kerrang, probably from 1999, I think is the first appearance of where it was like, oh, look at these weird websites. It, like literally says like, whoa, weird websites.
And like, do you know that what as I mean? Well, yeah.
Like things
Kieran that, visited like, a lot of those websites.
I ran those websites.
Yeah. Like it was sort of all tied up in that, but there were, and like it was occasionally like, oh, do you want to go to www.http/ like they would write websites out like that rather than it sort of becoming like part of the cultural language, you know?
Yeah.
So it was like a new thing, but a lot of that's gone. And this is the other thing about like ephemera of paper stuff. And then ephemera of internet culture, this is another this is a really boring topic, but I'm interested in it.
Well, that's all good.
Like, archiving stuff on the internet is like a really hot topic, especially for sort of subcultures and like smaller groups of things. So a lot of this stuff on the Old Kerrang website, obviously because the websites have been updated and things, there's no record of a lot of the stuff. So, you know, like they'll say, oh, visit this website. It doesn't exist anymore because it's not there. So there's like this big thing missing out. And like, it's like, you know, when you would get your gig photos or you'd get your club night photos, and those websites just don't exist.
We were so lucky, I think, as well, to just grow up in a time where, because I mean, you know, rock music and metal music, punk rock music, right, it's not mainstream anymore. I mean, it'll be hard for people who are younger to understand that there was a time when new metal, pop punk, these genres that were mainstream and dominated mainstream TV, dominated movies, you know, soundtracks to films. I mean, the idea now, obviously, I don't know, a new metal song being like the Scream soundtrack, for example, the Slipknot were on the Scream soundtrack. Horror is a different thing, I suppose. But this was a time where it was booming and it was just all permeating, and it wasn't like it is now where everything's kind of just spread so thinly. It was huge and it was everywhere. Like new metal, pop punk, MTV2, Scuzz, Kerrang, you know, like you say, club nights, they were everywhere, and it wasn't a niche thing in any way. It was a very mainstream thing.
Aging ourselves as well, watching Top of the Pops and things like that. I remember Limp Bizkit being on Top of the Pops. Alien Ant Farm, Sum 41 definitely were, because they were my favourite band. Like, and I had a picture of Fred Durst that was out of Smash Hits magazine when I was 10, like a double side poster. The idea of like Fred Durst being in a magazine was like the Backstreet Boys. It was such like a culture clash of this like mainstream cultures. And yeah, it was, you know, MTV Spring Break, that was a big one. I always remember that. And like the big festivals, like there was sort of a lot more, I don't know. I think a lot of it was money as well. Going back to your original point, I think there was much more money in music.
Yeah.
You see Napster again. It's the 9/11 of the music world, like to be awful about stuff. But you know, like when they would just be like, oh, you want to record an album, and you're Jonathan Davis from Korn's brother. Yeah, all right, here's 500 grand to go and do it, and it's crap. Yeah, yeah. But it's like, we've just got infinite money. Do you know what I mean? And like, oh, you want to do a Limp Bizkit remix album? All right. Do you know what I mean? And Wes Borland's side project. Yeah. Never heard a note of it. Hey, we're going to give it a major release. Things like that.
Do you want to do a Limp Bizkit remix album? And also people are going to buy the Limp Bizkit remix album. I don't know. I kind of feel in a way we're kind of lucky to have been one of the last generations before the internet became what it is now, because it was so exciting to discover music. And I can remember, you know, you'd sit on Kerrang and catch the tail end of a song, and then you know, maybe like the last minute or so, and then you'd end up sitting there, wouldn't you, for like another 3 hours waiting for it to come on. And I guess in that way, that kind of adds a bit more value to music. I mean, like, you know, actually sitting and waiting for it, you know, it's kind of like a reward to actually wait for to hear this music that, you know, that you really wanted to listen to. Whereas obviously it's a lot easier now, isn't it?
It's a blessing and a curse, isn't it? Because like, anyone can make music so much cheaper now. Anyone can have their music heard by so many more people now.
Yeah.
But there is that thing of, it's not that there's loads of bad music out there. I mean, there probably is, but there is a sense of like infinite and kind of throwaway that didn't really exist. It felt like when I was growing up that there was like 20 or 30 bands and that was it. But like buying an album, and we've talked about this so many times, but it was a monumental decision buying an album. Spending a tenner on a compact disc was like, it wasn't something you just casually did. It was something you thought about and planned. It was a really important thing you do on a Saturday.
A tenner if you were lucky as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A tenner's expensive. Like the minimum.
And then you'd be going in and they had like the listening stations, didn't they? That you'd have like the next, you know, big CDs, whatever coming out, which was, you know, was like Limp Bizkit and stuff, wasn't it? But it's just crazy to think like that actually happened, you know, like nowadays. I mean, it's cool, like you say, Graham, you know, nowadays you can listen to any band at any time. You know, I guess it's kind of oversaturated in a way, but then at the same time, there might be a band that, you know, on the other side of the ocean that gets, you know, 1,000 listens a year that you somehow discover because you've got Spotify. So yeah, it's kind of a catch 22. It's great to be able to support smaller bands like that and check them out and listen to them. But then at the same time, there's the whole issue about Spotify paying, you know, 0.00000 cents, yeah, 0.00 cents or whatever for each play.
It devalues it, doesn't it, for everyone? Sort of for the consumer, because you, like you say, it's so throwaway and you're like, well, I don't like this, so I'm not going to listen to it again. Or then for the, and the companies know that as well, so they don't invest money in bands because they know how cheap it is. And yeah. Like, yeah, it's a shit situation. But yeah, would you rather it be that, or would you rather it be like mainstream albums that you're going to spend 20 quid on and it's absolutely awful? Do you know what I mean, as well? So it's a blessing and a curse is the right term.
yeah, there are definite pros and cons. Are there any, I mean, I wonder if, like, obviously you're into this music anyway because you're doing what you're doing, but I wondered if collecting all these issues of Kerrang! Magazine is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, whether you find yourself listening more to that older music than you probably would have if you weren't doing this. Is there any bands that you still kind of just from that era that never faded away and that you still really enjoy on a regular basis?
Yeah, and like, so I mean, Sum 41 were my first band. I was a little bit too young for Blink-182, but they were probably the first mainstream like rock band that I remember being like, I like this. Sum 41 were my band. I loved them. They were the greatest. A lot of the stuff, like I say, and like a combination of the two things, I didn't have money, so I couldn't buy the music, and I didn't have the internet, so I couldn't hear it. So it was a case of, am I going to hear it on the telly at my friend's house, or I'll hear it on the free CD?
Are you listening to this, kids, you ungrateful bastards?
I know. So yeah, I mean, I still unironically adore Green Day. Like, I still look up every single thing that they do. I was more into the pop punk side. The metal side wasn't really my side as much. So I used to get Kerrang! For the mentions of bands like Sum 41. I really liked Papa Roach as well, I can't deny it. I was the right age. Linkin Park too. And they're still on my playlists. But a big thing for me was, and I think it's quite common for young people, where you start off, it's like baby's first rock band, you have a band that gets you in, and then that inspires you to move on to other stuff. I went the other way, and I came out of the rock thing, and I went into indie. So I moved from Kerrang! To NME when I was about 14. So I was like, oh, rock music, metal music, get that away from me, vehemently against it, even though it was in my blood. And it was just because of the people I was hanging out with, not that they were against it. It was just when you're young, you just assimilate to whatever.
Yeah, peer pressure.
Groups of friends you're with. And then as I got older, and as I realised that actually I do like this stuff, I should have given it a chance. And like, I should never have pretended I didn't. Like, one of my biggest ones, and it's not really, it's like the biggest band of all time, it's Metallica. I always used to be like, oh my, I did have friends who were really into metal, and I was like, oh, Metallica is so lame, so lame. But it was like, I came to them so late, and I was like, oh my God, they're so good. I understand why people like them. But the reason I didn't like them was because of these magazines, because the era I was getting them was Saint Anger era. So that was the first Metallica song I heard, was Saint Anger. Saint Anger and that cover of Whiskey in the Jar, that was what was on.
Yeah,
and I was like, God, this is shit.
And what was the mission? I Disappear, that was the Mission Impossible one, wasn't it?
Now that is really good.
But yeah, I don't mind that song. I think it's pretty good.
I enjoy that song, but I don't know what it is. Like, I think this kind of ties in with, you know, something you were saying before, but as well, with age, I think you start to appreciate older music more as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that video. For some reason, the audio was always terrible on that video when it was on TV. I don't know why. It sounded like it was being played to a pillow. But I found, like, getting older, you can go back to bands maybe, you know, that were making music in the 80s or the 90s, or, you know, the recording quality was really bad. But you can still appreciate the music for what it is. Whereas when, you know, you're 14, 15, you know, and you hear these older tracks and the recording quality is quite bad, you kind of immediately switch off to it. And I know I did that with a lot of albums. You know, I'd go back and like abandon and listen to some of the earlier stuff and just be like, no, this isn't for me, and end up just listening to the two most recent albums. But then as you get older, you appreciate that kind of adds a bit of character to it as well.
I think one of my big transitions was, like, I think like Nirvana a lot. That was always, I think every teenager does, they go through a Nirvana phase.
Mm.
And obviously that opened my eyes into the lo-fi stuff. Nobody, you don't like Nirvana, that's fine.
I totally went through a Nirvana stage.
Everyone does, but yeah, and like that opened my eyes to sort of more lo-fi. It made me appreciate like the early Metallica stuff, Misfits albums from the 70s. Like I was like punk as well, so. But yeah, it was always weird. Like a band that I've been to see Sum 41 quite a lot. The last time I went to see them, I think, was 2016. At the age of 27, which isn't that old really, but I felt very old when I was there because they still have like a young audience.
Do they? That's really surprising.
It was on a Kerrang tour. It was like they were headlining a Kerrang tour, and there was like other bands on as well, like younger, more upcoming
bands. Any younger people would be into kind of en masse like that type of music. A type of music that, I mean, pop punk especially, even more than metal, is absolutely dead. Like, I mean, you know, you can talk about small pockets of places where it's still kind of going. You talk about bands like Newfound Glory who are still absolutely destroying it when they shouldn't have any right to be. They're so good, though. I think, like, it's interesting that pop punk's still got, like, a young following, because it's a very niche thing now, you know. Gone are the days when it was the American Pie soundtrack.
It's coming back. I got...
It comes back every 5 years, though, doesn't it?
It is actually coming back, though. Like, there's that Machine Gun Kelly.
That's good.
That was American number one, and that kid called Youngblood. They're like very pop punky, but the Machine Gun Kelly, I got the new Tony Hawk for my birthday, and they've got one of those songs on, and it's got Travis Barker drumming, and I was like, this is just a Plus 44 song. It sounds like Plus 44. It doesn't even sound like Blink 182.
Yeah, that first track you released, and I was kind of geared up to be like, what the hell is this? But I wasn't as sick at it as I thought I would be. I actually quite enjoyed it.
I think Travis Barker drums on every song on the album, doesn't he?
Does he?
I might be wrong. I think, didn't he produce it as well? I might be wrong.
But I thought that was interesting because I was like, oh, so they actually, it's become like a thing where, like, back in the day, it would be like, oh, we've got like Fear Factory, oh, we're doing, we've got, oh, Cold Chamber with Ozzy Osbourne, like, oh, we've got an Ozzy Osbourne track, or like Fear Factory with Gary Numan. Everyone always goes back to the people who inspired them. So we've got like this 28-year-old Machine Gun Kelly with Travis Barker, and it's like, all right, yeah, so that's the revival of it coming around. So.
Mm.
And we were talking earlier about like how people are so, like, when we were younger, especially in the UK, people were very entrenched in the type of music that they listened to, and it was much more definitive of their identity. It's nice in a way that people aren't like that anymore, because it opens up so many possibilities, and there aren't these boundaries anymore that hold people back. Like, you know, we've talked about it before, the whole pop punk moving into like rap, basically, like Lil Peep. People like that basically making pop punk that's just got some 808s on it. And it's nice that people can move around and do different stuff without, back in the day, if you'd gone to rap from metal or pop punk or something, you'd have been shamed.
The reaction to, do you remember Reanimation by Linkin Park?
Yeah.
I think that got 1K, but they were the ones who actually, they were the first, because obviously they did that Jay-Z album as well.
Yep.
They were like the first legitimate band to sort of cross those boundaries, I think. I suppose the Family Values tour as well. They had Ice-T on the first one and Method Man on Limp Bizkit and things like that. So,
but it's interesting as well, because Linkin Park, I feel, maybe not the only, but one of the few bands from that era that really, I suppose, were actually quite smart about what they were doing and didn't just try to cling on to like the early new metal or the early alternative, you know, music they were making and try and keep pushing that. And, you know, a lot of bands ultimately just turned into this weird, well, it's butt rock, isn't it? You know, butt rock.
I think they were really lucky as well, like, because that, obviously, Hybrid Theory, I have such a soft spot for it because it was perfect for me, came out at the right time. Like, they were so lucky that it's lingered for so long and it became such a modern classic. It's like still one of the biggest selling albums of all time. I think it's like in the top 10 of the most selling albums around the world of all time or something ridiculous. Like,
and it's such a bridge as well, that album, isn't it? Like, I think for a lot of people who weren't necessarily into that type of music, like Chester's kind of almost boy band vocals. And it was a very accessible album.
There's no swears.
Yeah.
No swears. The most aggressive they got was saying, "Shut up when I'm talking to you." Yeah.
My mum absolutely loved that track. You'd hear that blasting out the other side of the house. It was quality. Yeah. But that album, I think there was a lot of attention to songwriting with Linkin Park rather than just being like, here's a heavy riff. I've got some lyrics about how much I hate my dad. Mm-hmm. Here's another heavy riff or whatever, screaming end or whatever. So that, you know, there was more, it was definitely more accessible than some of the other music that was out, but there seemed to be a lot more thought into what they were doing than just trying to be angry and angsty and, mm-hmm. you know, appeal to the masses that way.
And ultimately, they're a manufactured band, weren't they? They were put together.
Well, I think they sort of were and they sort of weren't. I don't think they were manufactured in terms of, like, they had a management company that advertised for people. But I think, I could be wrong, maybe you'll know better than me, Rachel, but I think they were a band and then they had management and the management got hold of Chester, I think.
Yeah, that's it. Because they were called Hybrid Theory.
Yeah.
And then Chester was in that band Grey Days. And, like, they sort of needed a singer, I think. Is the story, but yeah.
They... Imagine you're in a band and you're like, we need a singer, like there's one missing piece and then Chester Bennington turns up, you'd be like, lottery, we've won the lottery here.
It was devastating when he died. It really did feel like, I don't know, I remember my mum texted me because she knew that even though I was like 27, 28, she was like, I know, like, you were so into this and you can't help, even though I wasn't into the most recent Linkin Park albums at that time, it was just like so needless and sad and like, you know, you felt bad about all the criticism, like you were saying, like, oh, they're a manufactured band, they're a pop band, they're this, they're that, and it's actually, no, they were, like, what he was saying was true, and it's like... Yeah, it's really sad. And Kurt Cobain and new metal, I'll say it. It was really, really sad. It was the end of an era for a lot of people, I think.
I think that was one of those things where, I know everyone always says it and it's a bit corny, but one of the things where, you know, he's in one of the most successful bands in the whole world. But that doesn't mean that everything is peachy and everything is great all the time.
No.
So, it was a massive shock. But then there was like, that was around, I don't know if it was before or after Chris Cornell.
Yeah, it was after.
He went to his funeral, didn't he?
Yeah, he was friends with him. And Scott Weiland as well.
Yeah.
It was after that because he'd taken over for Scott Weiland on some of their tour dates. So it was just like, he's just losing people left, right and centre. And then if he's already got mental health issues, then it's, do you know what I mean? It's a bit of a bad scene. And like you say, you can be as successful as you want. And I'm not one for saying money can't buy you happiness, but sometimes it is true. So... You know,
I think, well, it'll definitely help.
Yeah, it does help, but obviously not in the grand scheme of things in that case. But it made me feel incredibly sad, and I do get very melancholy when I think about him.
Well, speaking of Linkin Park, let's speak about pop first.
Yeah, I was just, one of the things that we wanted to ask you is, obviously, you kind of alluded to it already when you talked about... going over to the indie side of the indie rock side of life, but are you into music outside of alternative music, or do you kind of stay true to Kerrang's old school I hate pop philosophy?
And bear in mind that we do have the power to revoke your Mosher cards. You've got to be careful what you say here.
That is true.
No, we'll let you speak freely for a bit.
Yeah, I do. I'm like a big pop guy. I like pop music. Like, I like a lot of, I've got a lot, this is going to make me sound like I'm trying to like prove a point. I've got a lot of gay friends. So I like a lot of like sort of club music. I've got a friend who sends me whenever there's like a sort of fun new pop song. Like, so like, I suppose the Dua Lipa, that was the big one this year. Mm-hmm. That's like, so I always get those. I really like Carly Rae Jepsen. She's probably my favorite of the like modern pop stars. But yeah, I also had a big Outkast phase, but there was quite a lot of crossover with the rock thing there, I suppose. I'm sure, I don't know if you can see in the background, there's like quite a lot of CDs. That's just one tower. We still buy CDs in this house.
What are they again?
Exactly, there's records there as well though. And I'm just like, you know, looking at the stuff that we've got, we've just got such a range of stuff. My big thing at the moment, the last few years, I've been getting really into like old emo, like 90s and 2000s emo, not like My Chemical Romance stuff, the like sort of like Get Up Kids and before that stuff, because that was something that I'd missed, even though it was in Kerrang at the time. I just wasn't,
yeah.
It didn't attract me. It should have. I wish it had, because it's in here so much, looking back at it. And yeah.
Tell All Your Friends, Take It Back Sunday. That's like
such a good album. Kind of,
yeah, that was one of my kind of watershed albums.
I don't think we've ever discussed this, Graham, but did you have an emo phase? Because I, to be honest, I never really got into it.
Well, the thing is, I think when I look at it, and I think that, again, this is because I'm older, what people talk about and describe as emo, I'm like, no, that's bullshit. Like Fall Out Boy, like, it's just not for me. Like emo was kind of the almost like the post-hardcore stuff in the late 90s and early 2000s, kind of coming mostly out of New York. But yeah, things like you said, like Get Up Kids, Take It Back Sunday. It was never, I don't know. It wasn't, I don't associate emo with that other wave of bands that came along, but I totally see why people do. But I see stuff described as emo sometimes, and I'm like, what are you talking about? But everyone's different, and it's a subjective thing.
It is true, but that's been my thing the last, like the most, like this year, getting into a lot of that stuff. Yeah, and like I like everything. I know that's like a bit of a cop out, but I really, really do like. And it's only like the last 5 or 6 years that I've really sort of embraced my new metal side as much as I have, and it sort of triggered me onto the magazine thing, because I always thought it was something to be ashamed of, because it was sort of maligned. Hide yourself. That's the word. But yeah, like my boyfriend, I've said we've been together for nearly 8 years now, but I think he's about the same age as you. He's in his like mid-30s.
Mid-20s.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
he gave me some of his magazines as well. So he's got some from an earlier era than I remember. And he had an older sister who was really, her favourite band was the Deftones. So he got into the stuff at the time as well, even though he was quite young. So he's been a really good like help when I'm like, have you ever heard of this band? And he's like, oh yeah, it's this, that and the other. And I'm like, oh, cool. But yeah, like there's a lot of occasional nights where I'll get a rum. I'll get a big rum and I'll put YouTube on and I'll find a playlist that says Kerrang TV 2001, and I'll just press play.
Yeah, we did this. One of the first dates that me and Kieran had was at my house.
Right.
I think this is like because we used to work together, me and Kieran, and yeah, I think I don't know how we just started chatting to it. It is sounding like a romance story now.
Our eyes met across the office.
We just started chatting to each other, and then like his hand touched mine on the stapler. No, but we had to. Yeah, we did this, didn't we? Where we like both kind of discovered that we'd grown up around a lot of the same stuff and a lot of the same kind of, especially like new metal. And we were like, right, I'm gonna make like a 100 song playlist, and you're gonna come around mine, and we're gonna just watch it and get drunk. And it was amazing. It was a special night.
Do you know what? I remember one of the first conversations I had about you.
About me? Fucking hell.
Well, I was talking about you behind your back, and we were saying, oh, that Graham.
What a bellend.
Yeah, I remember asking you what music you're into, and I remember you telling me you're really into rap, and me being, you know, shallow and, you know, one-dimensional, just assume that was all you're into. And then we were talking again one day, and you said something about Davey Havoc, and like my ears pricked up, and I was like, what? What did you say? Like Davey Havoc, like AFI, quality. I was like, you like AFI? What? And then, yeah, it was just a sequence of events like the butterfly effect. And now we're here talking about new metal.
Here we are.
I met one of my best friends on jury service in a similar sort of thing. I had a tote bag.
Were they the murderer?
No, fortunately not. I had a tote bag that I'd sewn a Danzig patch onto. And I'd had it like in the main courtroom, like the waiting area for jury service. And we'd both... like total chance, it was a total chance, and I'm, you know, those moments where you're like, where are we supposed to meet? This is like, you're like my friend, soulmate, do you know what I mean? And I remember like we ended up on the same trial, and it was 6 weeks long, and we just at the end of every day we would just sit in her car smoking roll up cigarettes, moaning about everyone on our jury because they were all absolute assholes. And like we weren't supposed to be friends with each other. It was like, oh, if you know, like, you know, don't fight us. But then by the time jury service is over, best of friends, go out all the time, go to like rock night, realize we like the same music. And I was like, how did we like even start talking? She was like, I noticed that Danzig patch on your bag, and I thought, we're gonna be friends. And we are. That's amazing. Like that's how you do it. It's just that one little thing.
And like, how music connects people. And we, one of the reasons we were excited to talk is because, and people might realize that my accent is a little bit stronger this week, purple circle, mate, is that we're both from, well, me and you both grew up in the Northeast, in around a very similar area around Middlesbrough. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was the nights out that you used to have and whether there was any overlap between where we used to go and where we used to be. So I'm assuming you would have gone to the Empire more than a few times.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was I used to go to gigs there quite a lot. And then when Sumo moved there, I went there a few times. But they used to have Club NME there on a Thursday. Wow. So that was where I started going out, my first night out. But of course, we'll get there. Corner House, Sumo.
Yeah, all those places. Did you ever go to Legends in Newcastle?
Yes.
Did you have a pint of purple?
Yeah, because after I moved from Teesside, I moved up to Newcastle for university. Oh, yeah. So,
of course you did.
Yeah, so I went to Legends a few times. Absolutely disgusting.
It is horrible. Like, one of the stickiest places on planet Earth. Like,
no longer there. It is an everyman cinema now.
Yeah, and it's probably a good thing, to be honest. sometimes the music deserves to die. But did you ever have a pint of purple there?
I don't think I did. I think by the time I was there, it had progressed on to Skittles.
Right. So I think Skittles. Probably what had happened was, this is in the days when drinks weren't regulated and you could just put like terps and bleach in them and stuff. There was these two alcohol pops, and they were I don't think they had names. One was called blue, one was called red. And if you were feeling, you know, crazy, you could just ask for like a pint of purple, which was a bottle of each poured into a pint glass. Like, a conversation about Red Bull the other week has basically just led to heart palpitations and probably irreversible nerve damage.
Every photo of me from like 2006 to like 2009 on those nights out, because obviously that was, you know, 2006 was when people started getting digital cameras and you had to take them on every night out.
That was
the rule. You had to take a digital camera. Obviously you had to have the flash on because, you know, got to see it properly. Every photo of me, I've got red stained lips from drinking Cherry VK. The most disgusting. The idea of drinking one of those now, my stomach just turns like the toothache in the morning you'd have, like, and yeah, the red stain just would never come off. Just honestly, just disgusting. But I remember the other rock club in Newcastle when I first moved here was a place called Venue. It was called Crash with a K. And that was like rock. But then they would occasionally drop in some Lady Gaga. So it was quite fun. Like, it was like, oh, I'm drunk enough to enjoy this. But also I actually really enjoy it because it's Lady Gaga.
That's me and Kieran. I did Lady Gaga on Shameless Sunday a few weeks back.
But then that was around because I'd stopped going to rock clubs in like 2010, 2011 before then. I ended up like going back when I moved to uni and sort of enjoying the rock club music, because I'd been going to indie clubs and like discovering the new rock music that had come around. So there was there's a Hollywood Undead song that is awful, but it has shades of new metal, and it I'm kind of fond of it because it sounds like Eminem rapping over rock. I don't know if you know it.
I know that one that sounds like Crazy Train.
It's called Everywhere I Go, Bitches Everywhere Always Know.
I go, every smile. That's Janet Jackson.
I'll send you when it's over. It's awful. Awful. But that's like the big rock song. That was one of the big rock songs. And also like Crazy Bitch by Buck Cherry. That seemed to come out of nowhere. I was like, why are you doing this? This is awful.
That's the one. There's so many they always just used to pull out.
Do you know what though? I've sort of realised recently that I'm too old for going out, because we've got a club in, I don't know if you'll have ever been out in Manchester, Rachel, but we have a club called Satan's Hollow. Where it's like the floor is really sticky, every drink you get is in like a weird like fluorescent orange plastic cup, and it's just so loud in there. And like I didn't go there until maybe in my sort of mid-20s, maybe about 10 years ago or something, and then you have a great night. But then going there now, the first thing you do when you walk in is think it's really loud in here. Like it's probably a bit too loud. And my wife said to me a while back,
"Kids are all right."
Yeah. I went out with my wife, not there, but another place, maybe about a year, 18 months ago. And we were stood in there, and then she was stood next to this speaker, and I was like, come over here, stand over here. And she's like, why, what's up? And I was like, you're standing too close to speak, you're going to damage your hearing. And she was just like, you are too old to be going out now. So yeah, Saints Hall has made me realize that, you know, maybe it's time to hang up my baggies. I don't know.
I started working because I moved back to Teesside and then moved back up to Newcastle in my mid-20s. And when I moved back, I got a job in a sixth form college, so 16 to 18 year olds. And every single place that I would go, I would see kids there, like kids from the college, and like gigs, nights out, anywhere, walking the street. I'd go into a pub and they'd be working behind the bar, and I'd be like, this is fine, because I don't mind. Like, because obviously it was a massive college, it was like 1,200 students or something. But it just got to the point where I would be on a night out and I would just be really paranoid that someone would see me and I'd get told off, even though I'm allowed to go out, it's absolutely fine. Or like I would do or say something stupid again, not that I would, but you know, that anxiety. And then like I remember I was coming out of a club one night and I saw one of the students and she was sitting on the floor and I was like, I need to help this student because it's one of my students, but also the worry of like, what if I talk to the student and she thinks I'm being weird, and I'm not. I'm just being like a concerned adult who's in a position of power where she goes. You know what I mean? I just went.
You went like, over and just said, "Look, it's going to be okay."
Yeah,
and
then I was how are you getting home? Have you got money for a taxi? Do you know what I mean? And like, just that was all. So I was like, and then I remember just thinking, I can't bump into these students anymore. Just
have a pint of purple and you'll be fine.
But yeah, like that one of the other mortifying ones, this is an embarrassing story. I went to see Eagles of Death Metal in like 2000. And what was the year that the Bataclan happened? Was that 2016?
15,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
15, yeah. It was on that tour. It was a few days before that gig. And my friend works for an amp company. I works for a guitar company. So he'd got us free tickets and we were backstage. So we were watching from the side of the stage and that was, you know, very fun and exciting. And then at the end, we were hanging out, drinking with the band. This sounds like a brag. It's not. We didn't, anyway. And like Jesse, the lead singer, took a shine to me. And like, you know, I was like, I have to go to work tomorrow. I'm really sorry. I'm going. So I left my friends and he was like, I'll walk you out. So he walked me out to the back of the O2 Academy and there was people waiting to get signatures and stuff. There was a group of four students outside seeing me come out of the backstage with the lead singer of the band with his arm around me. And I was like, I literally just went up to them and I was like, do not ever mention this. And then the next morning, because I worked on the reception, the next morning when they came in, they just caught my eye and I was like, don't mention it. You didn't see anything.
But yeah, see, whereas if you were in school, you'd totally be wanting that rumour to be spread.
Yeah, oh my God, it was awful.
Well, I mean, maybe not. But
I was just like mortified. It was like those moments where I was like, I can't, I'm too old for this. And then I don't have that job anymore. Things became good again because I was like, I don't give a shit anymore. I can talk to them if I want. It's fine. Like, I don't have to worry.
Yeah, we had a teacher at school, and I don't know how true this all was, but supposedly he was like really good at blagging his way into places. And he was one of those people where he's like, yeah, you just got to be confident. As long as you're confident, like, you'll get away with it and you'll be believable. And apparently, supposedly blagged his way into like some, like, I think a World Cup football game. And then there was also a rumor going around that he blagged his way into backstage at a Chili's gig. And I was kind of like, I don't know if that's like one of those things that's quite unrealistic. Therefore, it must be true because, like, out of all the bands, you know, Chili's has got to be hard to blag your way into because it's an arena gig, isn't it? But I don't know whether he did it or not. But
yeah.
Maybe he did. Maybe he's here right now in one of our rooms.
Mr. Keebus, he was. He was a music teacher.
Is it like on The Simpsons when Homer goes backstage with U2 and he just has a sack of potatoes and he just goes, potato man. And he just comes over and he's just like, California man.
Could be.
I'm here with your California, Mr. Keebus.
Let's take a bag of potatoes. Should we have a look at some mosher mags?
Yes. I'm really sorry I've talked so much.
I know. Come on a podcast to be interviewed and you're talking.
God, imagine talking on
a... Yeah, this is going to be an hour of silence. I've got a few. So I actually thought I had way more old Kerrang magazines than I did. I must have chucked a load out because the ones I've got seem to only be ones that like have some sort of meaning to me, which basically means AFI are in it. So my dad sent me some over, but I don't know where the other ones went. I should have kept them, really.
Well, at least you've got some because I have none. But I was an avid reader of Kerrang and Metal Hammer and Rock Sound and Big Cheese. Does anyone remember Big Cheese?
Big Cheese, yeah, of course.
Not only, like, yeah, and it was not just punk and metal, it was hip-hop too, so that just like, oh, what a magazine that was.
Go on, what have you dug out of your treasure trove?
I've got the Christmas issues of two of them. I thought they would be quite good ones. In fact, I'm missing one, the one I actually wanted to talk about. Just 2 seconds. Oh, it was in front of me.
There it is.
It was right next to me.
What are we looking at here?
So I've got, this is Christmas 2001.
I had that one.
Christmas 2001. I've just got this one. The reason I got this one, and I think it's relevant for your podcast, because so many people message me, have you got the issue of Kerrang where Rage and Speedhorn go around to someone's house for Christmas dinner? It's like, I actually don't. So I finally bought it so I can post it at Christmas.
Last
year I posted the year after they did Win In Me for your Christmas dinner. So I posted that last Christmas and everyone's like, oh, what about Rage and Speedhorn? So I don't have it. God's sake.
Oh, why didn't we invite Gordon around for Christmas dinner? I mean, that was probably like April or something, wasn't it? But
fine.
So wait, Rage and Speedhorn went around people's houses for Christmas dinner?
Yeah, so they had a competition where it was like, oh, you can come and they'll do a gig at your house. I don't know if you can see that.
That is epic.
So yeah, they went around to someone's house and like started drinking and yeah. Gordon
probably,
says...
Yeah. Mom, can I have some friends around on Christmas Day? No, you can't.
There's a nice quote from Gordon here. Yeah, carve that bitch up. Gordon Morrison attacks the Christmas turkey.
Oh, God.
That was quality.
I also like this one because this was relevant to me with where I'm from, where I live. Well, not where I'm from Teesside. Newfound Glory, carol singing on Northumberland Street in Newcastle.
Oh, nice.
It's so funny and weird. And I was like, sitting with my boyfriend, like, do you remember this? Did you see this? Oh, there's a good competition. Be a roadie for Incubus.
Yeah, that sounds like it wouldn't pass nowadays.
Be a
roadie for Incubus. A competition just to go and do some free manual labour for a day with Incubus.
Yeah. But you get some coke.
Yeah.
This is such a good issue. Because you know, remember in like the Christmas issues, they would always do like, oh, Christmas booze. Like, oh, let's make celebrities drink together. Can you imagine a worse group of people to go drinking with than this? So we've got Lemmy, which is fine, but you know you would talk your ear off and you wouldn't get a word in.
You would die as well. You would also die. You would die.
You would be dead.
Casey Chaos from Amen.
Right.
Amen, yeah. Nightmare. Good band. Remember them?
And then finally, I mean, and thinking about what he's like now, I can only imagine what he was like then. John Dolmayne from System of a Down.
Wow.
Those three people getting drunk.
Now that's a party, that is.
Nightmare.
I think there'd be a fight between Casey Chaos and John Dolmayne. I could see it kicking off.
I can imagine Lemmy getting in a fight with one of them, like a proper fist fight, and then at the end just being like, right, we're over now, should go and get a drink.
Awful. They're discussing things such as, while they're drunk as well, just to the rise of new metal, the election of George W. Bush.
Oh dear.
Foot and mouth disease.
What?
Mobile phones and the rise and fall of Napster. If you have to guess what year that was from, it's from 2001.
Is this a Kerrang or a history book?
Exactly.
I could just imagine Lemmy, I ain't got a bloody mobile phone. Just imagine Lemmy sat there.
Because there wasn't enough booze in this. There's another one. There we can see that's a different one. And it's Silver Ginger 5. So we've got Ginger Wildheart. There's another man who you wouldn't want to go drinking with because that man would kill you. Mm. Matt Skiba of Alkaline Trio and the guy from Anti-Product who were in Kerrang! Art, but I don't remember them.
Oh, I remember them now.
I remember the name, but I don't remember the music.
Yeah.
But they're reviewing alcoholic drinks. So we've got Kay Cider, Bacardi Breezer, a bottle of Hooch.
Oh, I used to love a Bacardi Breezer though. Not even joking.
And a can of Budweiser, like just like awful beer, awful booze. And
how could you review a can of Budweiser?
I know.
That's amazing. Like, is it a new can or something? Like a new design on the can? Or?
No, I think it kind of just looks like the Budweiser advert cans, I suppose.
But I feel like that's like one of those, like, you know, when you meet the craft beer people who are like obsessed with beer, they'd be like, I'm going to review this beer can, not the beer, but the actual can itself.
Yeah, the artwork.
Classic design.
Yeah, yeah. It sits in my hand really well, and it's generous to the poor.
Can I read you some Santa letters from celebrities, and you can try and guess who they're from?
Yes,
that would
please.
Be quite fun, I think.
Well, are they from famous people?
Yeah, they're not actually, though. They faked them, so
oh,
just bear
right,
that
okay.
in mind.
Okay, let me find a good one. Okay. You're fat bitch, give me these. One red cap, one black cap, one more red cap. P.S. One Wes Ball and Voodoo Doll.
Ready day.
Ooh, I wonder.
What about this one? Dear Satan, could you get your goblins to bring me the following? 35 boxes of earwax remover, 72 boxes of Kleenex. New Order's Greatest Hits. Poster of Leonard Nimoy. Roll of lino for my cave. Black Jim Jams. Thank you.
Ooh, I don't even know.
I feel like that's going to be like Mortis or something.
It's Mortis.
Yes.
It's Mortis.
Wow, spot on, mate.
Okay, here's another one. Right, I'll do this one last. We wouldn't like, we need pain, anger, hate, violence, rage, malevolence, and 9 Terry's chocolate oranges.
Slipknot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they've done a really funny Slipknot, like a chocolate orange with like...
I would have got it, even if you hadn't said all the hate words, and even if you hadn't said 9, I just know that they're big fans of Terry's chocolate oranges.
So,
I don't know if they really are. That is... Like, what's amazing about, like, kind of hearing, listening to you read from these magazines now is, I remember at the time, like, Kerrang felt to, like, 16-year-old me, Kerrang felt like a serious musical publication.
Yeah.
It's just a bit of a joke, really, wasn't it? Like, it's pretty cheesy when you listen to it now. It's pretty cringeworthy.
Smash hits for people that like guitars.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
It is, totally.
Yeah, I picked out a few, I can't remember what they were now, but I've put a few post-it notes in here. I flicked through yesterday. I'm trying to figure out what it all was about. This is the one I think I mentioned you on Instagram. So this is the...
a classic.
The classic Linkin... This is from Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory Tour. And speaking of keeping the magazines that meant something to me, because I went to this gig, so it was pretty cool. And then I said as well, I think I said to you, there's a guy on the front you can just... Well, you probably can't make him out there. But there's a guy there, and I went to school with him, and I remember looking up at him. And that's the end of that story.
You went to school with Chester Bennington?
Yeah, yeah.
So confused.
Me and Chester, I think I've met him at this page because there was a whole article about when Limp Bizkit released Boiler, and it was all controversial because there was worms in it and Wes Borland's head fell off.
Yeah.
Remember that? I don't have a clue why I am at this page. Top 40 albums, to be fair, I think that was what it was. So this was October 6, 2001. Alien Ant Farm was number one. Stained was number two. Slayer was number three. Slipknot was number four with Iowa.
Alien Ant Farm. God.
I went to see them about 3 years ago. It was Alien Ant Farm, Soil.
Oh, amazing.
And
oh,
Miracle
my God.
H. And I got the tickets because they were buy one, get one free on Black Friday.
Oh, amazing.
Wow. And then last year, I had
That's
tickets
the reason
again.
To go to a gig.
The Alien Ant Farm that I'd got for free from Black Brown got free on Black Friday, and it was Alien Ant Farm and POD, but I had kidney stones, so I couldn't go, which is really sad, devastating.
I don't know what's. I listened to I had listened to some for fun, some recent POD, and I think I'd rather have kidney stones if I'm honest. So you probably saved yourself there, but I would still pay good money to stand in a crowd and be there when the first syllable of "Every day is a new day."
Do you remember New Metal Night though when that played?
Remember what
New Metal Night at Deaf Institute?
Oh yeah, me and Kieran went to
talk about this.
I think we have on our very first episode.
Was it the one that it's like run by a company that goes around the country and like they have like wrestling on the big screens and like?
Oh no! It wasn't that slick.
Set up.
This was
okay.
This was called a New Metal Party, and we went to it in Manchester. Just over a year ago now, and it was basically DJed by someone who looked like MC Grinder from People Just Do Nothing. And that honestly, like, from the across the room, genuinely, he had the same hat, same like jumper. He just looked like MC Grinder, and that made it 100 times better. But yeah, it was just new metal bangers for like 3 hours, full of older people like us, trying not to dislocate their knees. Yeah, it was brilliant. It was so
good. I went to one like in Newcastle, and it was run by, I guess it's not the same people, but it's like a traveling new metal night. And
a circus.
It was really slick. Like they had like big projectors with like Attitude Era wrestling on, and like they had PlayStation 1 set up with like SmackDown on the PlayStation 1. That's and like amazing. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, and like it was amazing. And everyone was old. Everyone was over the age of at least 25, which was nice. I was still working at the sixth form at this point, so it was especially nice. And it was just the best night ever. Like, everyone had actually, like, made effort. Everyone had, like, dressed up. Like, I'd bought a Deftones t-shirt, especially. I bought a White Pony t-shirt, and my friend was wearing, like, an Adidas top, and, like, there's people with, like, red caps and chains, and I was like, where have you been? Where are you the rest of the time?
There's a lot of people, they wait in the shadows, and they wait, and then New Metal Night comes on, they're like, now it's my time.
This is the other thing that's, because, like, going back to sort of how my relationship with music's changed as I've got older, and similarly we were saying, Graham, about, you know, where we're from, there wasn't that many bands that came to Middlesbrough. That was my closest town, or Stockton. And like Newcastle is the closest city.
Yep.
And I couldn't get to gigs, couldn't get to like Newcastle gigs until I was like 17, and my friends had started to learn to drive. But then when I moved up here, it was this world opened up. So I started to go and see bands. I was like, I always wanted to see that band. Like, absolutely wanted to. And I stopped being ashamed of it. So in the last few years, I went to see Static X last year. I went to see with the...
Nice. I love Static X. Great band.
So that was Static X, Wednesday 13, and Soil again.
What? It was Soil? I only remember one song.
They were really popular over here for some reason. Yeah. So, yeah, then that Alien Ant Farm gig, I went to that one. I went to see the Newfound Glory 20th anniversary tour.
Oh, you can't go wrong with Newfound Glory.
It was great.
How are they even still doing it?
Amazing.
And one of the things I love about Newfound Glory as well is that they have genuine respect from the hardcore scene because of Shai Hulud. If you haven't listened to Shai Hulud, God, I think, how old was, I think he was like 15 when he was singing in those, But Newfound Glory has like actual genuine like street cred from the hardcore scene, which is amazing when you consider that they're putting out covers of like Let It Go from Frozen. So good.
Yeah. I love those albums. They're from the Screen to the Stereo albums. I'm trying to think about, because it's been so long since I've been to a gig. I haven't been to one this year really. But yeah, like sort of starting to go to stuff where I'm like, I'm just going to go to that and I'm going to really enjoy it. And like, I'm going to unironically enjoy this. I got to see Linkin Park. That was good. I went to the arena to see that, and it was wonderful. Amazing. You know, like things that I couldn't see at the time, and I've sort of tried my hardest to like make up for it now, and I love it. Absolutely love doing it. Like,
I have a question for you both. Do either of you know the famous Chris or the famous Mark from Teesside?
Chris or Mark?
Yeah.
Who are these people?
Just because when I was looking through this one before, I got to the Musicians Wanted page, and I found bass player and guitarist wanted for Teesside metal band recording debut album, preferably age 28 or over, contact Chris or Mark. I won't read the phone numbers out because obviously we know many thousands of listeners would probably, you know, get in touch.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
No.
Maybe that was the only Teesside metal band. I don't know.
There wasn't much of a... I mean, there was, to be fair, because I played a really...
I remember Exit by Name. That was a big one.
Yeah. There was a really good kind of post-hardcore. There was a band I sent you recently, Kieran, My Favourite Co-Pilot, who were fantastic. But yeah, there was a lot of kind of, I remember a lot of post-hardcore bands around Teesside. Don't remember much in the way of metal, but you know, then again, I used to play in a pop punk band that covered the Home and Away theme, so what the fuck would I know about metal?
What would you know about? So we've kept you on for quite a while, but you must have some other cool little snippets that we can read out.
Have a little look.
Should we do some snippets? And then I think, Kieran, the last question, I think you should ask about the, ask the last question on that we've got. That would be a good one to end on, I think.
Would it? Which is the last question?
Are there any issues that carry a personal meaning? Or I guess favourite issues, but we can end on that.
I totally misread that. I misread that about issues in actually having issues.
Like, the album issues by Colin.
Yeah. I found something really good. I can't remember what it is and I can't find it now. But
I have to say, I do have it with me now. I would say my first one has a lot of very special meaning to me, which I do have down there. That was from 2001. And it was because I'd been to see the band Wheatus. They were one of my favourite bands because I was 11 and I didn't know better.
Question for you about Wheatus. I saw them a couple of years ago supporting A, I think.
But I went to that too, and it was Aiden in me.
Yeah,
which venue?
What?
Wheat has disappointed me. Like, I felt
like it's none of the original band. Like, he fell out with them all. His like brother's not even in it anymore.
I was really psyched about seeing them, and then they kind of came on, and they played Teenage Dirtbag, and then we're like, right, come on, next.
Yeah. It was disappointing. It was the first time I'd seen them since like 2003, so I saw them between the years of like 2001 and 2003 like five times or something ridiculous. Yeah. Because they used to come to Middlesbrough all the time. They played the Free Festival. Do you remember that? Middlesbrough Music Live. And like they played the Town Hall a few times.
Some great bands have played Middlesbrough Music Live. I saw the Menzingers in the Town Hall Square.
The Menzingers? Not the Menzingers. The Menzingers.
No, it was a Menzingers cover band called the Menzingers. they were former Chippendales. That's why I was there.
Did you do this?
Yeah, all the time. I've got loads that I cut up, absolutely hacked to bits.
Yeah, so for those obviously that are listening that can't see, I've got a chunk of a page that's taken out. I don't know if anyone else did this, but I had like one wall in my bedroom that I covered with posters, but I was like, I'm going to cover every single bit of wall. So I'd have like squares of like a magazine cut out that were like an inch by an inch. I'd be like putting on the wall to try and cover up all, you know, all the paint. That's how alternative I was.
I wasn't allowed at first. I was eventually, but my mum, this is good if you've got kids, so this is a good tip. You know, unrolled a roll of wallpaper the other way around. Let me have that. And I was allowed to decorate that however I wanted. It was just like taped onto the wall. And then
that's supposed to be like a shit cork board.
Essentially, but it was massive. So I could decorate it properly. It wasn't just like, I had a shit corkboard as well, but there's a good technique. And you can draw on it as well. So it's like encouraging them. Anyway.
That's a good idea, actually.
And then I did textiles at college, at sixth form. Not sixth form. At school, I did textiles. So I used a lot of the magazines to like cut shit out. So I cut loads of stuff out then. So, but I would say my favorite one, and this is one that I haven't hacked it up, which is a surprise, and I think I know why. I think it's because I knew it was special to me and I knew I would get asked this question 18 years later. So it's this issue from November 2002 with some 41 on the cover.
I think I had that one as well. I'm not sure though.
I think I had that one.
It had a CD with it, a free CD. It was The Best of 2002, which is a cracking CD. The first track is Awaken by Disturbed, so...
I remember that CD,
is The Story So Far by Newfound Glory, and the third track is Alive by POD, so there you go.
What a snapshot.
The fact that, like, people we used to, like, listen to, like, you imagine listening to, like, that is such a kind of varied mix of bands, Disturbed and Newfound Glory, which people like listening to that. But the days of magazines with free CDs, oh my God.
We still get them with Metal Hammer, because we've got a Metal Hammer subscription, and you still get them.
Seriously?
Yeah, so while the pandemic was at its height, they were just doing Spotify playlists, which was quite a good, But then we just got the Christmas issue and it came with the CD, so I guess they're making them again. So the other special thing about this issue, it's the one with the Slipknot baubles on the back.
Oh, there it is.
That's cool.
Not only is it a Sum 41 cover, also this came out on November the 30th, so it came out on the 27th, I guess. Of November, it used to come out like 3 days or 4 days before the published issue. That was my 12th birthday. That is the week of my 12th birthday. That's how young I am.
Wow.
And the fact that I didn't cut these out is unbelievable to me. Like, and the fact I didn't rip the cover off to have on my wall is really special.
Well, I think that's probably a good one to finish on, because like you say, Graham, that'll be the Antiques Roadshow one. That'll be the one, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you turn up and they're like, how much do you want for it? And you're like, I don't know, 10 quid or something. And they're like, this is worth £19,000.
some guys like, well, actually, it would have been worth £20,000, but it's now worth £35,000 because it's before Derek Whibley suffered from his alcohol problems. So it's worth a lot more, actually, looking back.
That was amazing.
I've cut the Smashing Pumpkins logo out.
Oh, that's just knocked £5,000 off it.
Oh, bloody hell. It's
fucked now. You're not going to get anything. 20 pence.
Yeah.
That was my alternative era. Damn it.
Yeah.
That was my alternative era.
Do you know what I thought that was interesting you saying about people like buying old shirts and stuff? Because you said this at the beginning of the interview, but I sold a load of those recently just because I had them in the wardrobe and I was like, I'll get rid of them. And I had like old Papa Roach shirts. Maybe I should have waited out a bit, because I'm sure I sold them for like a fiver. Maybe that's what would have made me rich.
We're gonna have to finish it now because Kieran's face has absolutely dropped. He's gonna have to genuinely. You're probably gonna be going to cry now. So
do you know what though? It's just it's not cool when you stood out the back of the Papa Roach gig when you're 14 and you've just bought your t-shirt and your sticker set. It's not cool to stand there and go, you know what, guys, this is an investment. This is going to earn me some money when I'm in my 30s, you know.
You're only saying that because you realise you're fucked up.
If only I could go back and speak to my past self. There's a lot I would tell my past self, but, you know, the first thing would be hold on to those t-shirts. But
would your past self listen, Kieran? It's like when you get older and people are like, hey, life goes by really fast when you get older, and you're like, yeah, fuck off, granddad. And then you get old and you're like, oh, shit, the days are drifting through my fingers. Anyway, on that note, yeah, on that grim finale.
Thanks, Rachel. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, a nice episode to go down memory lane.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I deserve how much money I've lost.
I'm thinking about my own mortality, and Kieran's thinking about how much better off he would have been. It's been a great episode.
I want a PS5. Come on.
Yeah, good luck trying to buy one. But no, like, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah. And it's so nice to kind of, and like, you know, it's easy to kind of sit here and have a laugh about Kerrang, and we should because it's funny. But I do genuinely think that kind of, you know, people like yourself who keep stuff and, I don't know, keep something alive at a time long after many people have forgotten it, I think is really important. And I think what you're doing is fantastic. And just well done. Well done to you. It's great.
Thanks. That's really nice. And it was really, really nice to chat to you. And hopefully I wasn't too boring.
Oh, God, no. Really, I mean, boring.
Is this why you said, Graham, about time? Oh, no, wait, I was going to say time going really slow. That doesn't make sense. Anyway, scrap that joke.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. And
it's been cool. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Yeah.
So anyone listening, go and check out Moshamag on Instagram and feel the warm wave of nostalgia. We'll see you later, Rachel. Thanks.
Cheers. Well, I still can't believe that Moshamag is a surname.
I know, it's so weird.
Yeah. Must be German or something, I don't know.
And Smiley Crab, if you're listening, and we'd love to hear from you. Oh, yeah. Fucking hell.
Oh man, whoever's made it this far in this episode must be thinking it's got to get better at some point. It has to.
This is the low point for someone just at this point now, like much like we are. Just what are we doing? Yeah,
well,
no, seriously, big up Rachel. Give Moshamag a follow because that was that was a cool chat. And yeah, it's just a mint account. Like I could spend hours just scrolling back to that account because there's just so much cool stuff on there. If you ever read a Kerrang, you need to be reading her Insta.
Yeah, and thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next year.
I just want to say thank you to a few people.
Okay.
Just this has nothing to do with you know, promotion to new listeners who, you know, we may want to encourage to go back and listen to previous episodes. But I'd just really like to say thank you to James Aaliyah, who was the drummer from Bunko and previously The Offspring. Oh, we've got an episode with him. Dan and Alan from 4 Year Strong. No way, we spoke to them as well.
Sure.
Merry Christmas to Gordon from Raging Speedhorn, which, no way, we've had a chat with him as well. Dan Franklin, who's a fantastic author, you know, I've heard an all-around great guy and a really good guy to, you know, to listen to, which, whoa, episode 6 with Dan Franklin. Do you see where I'm going here? Also, thank you.
Blow me down.
I won't keep going in with this because this is longer than the Simpsons quiz with Astronoid. thanks to Dan from Conjurer. Thanks to Craig from Sick of It All. Thanks to Justin from Hellas for Heroes and August Spies. Thanks to Stein from Brutus. Thank you to Paolo from Trivium because that was fucking awesome to speak to him. Thank you to Serena from Svalbard. And thank you to Brett from Astronoid. And thank you finally to Rachel Moshamag.
And thank you to you, the listener, because you're the real hero. You're the VIP.
Yeah. Do you know what? If Santa only comes to one person next year, I hope it's to you, the listener, the one listener that we have.
Oh, on that note,
yeah, let's wrap it up. All your guests have been fucking awesome this year, and you know, 12th is Pit is amazing. It's the best podcast on the internet. It's currently ranking number one in all the podcast lists in the world. If you're new to us, go back and listen to the episodes. If you haven't done it already, share it with everybody that you know, or Graham is going to come round your house and he's going to get in your bath with you.
Oh god, that we're gonna have a lawsuit on our hands if we don't stop talking. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Ridiculous.